Defendo Radio is on now.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Infendo Radio. I'm your co-host, Harrison Melfeld, and I'm here alongside with Lewis and Scott. Lewis, Scott, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Doing well, how are you guys?
Good. Enjoyable, like, Memorial Day weekend that we got coming up right now. I'm not sure if Lewis is familiar with that type of holiday here in the States, but it seems like we've had quite a few of those right now to explain to him.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely getting an education over here.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, Memorial Day is more of a day, is a day to honor those who are, like, you know, our fallen soldiers. Basically, it's a remembrance day. We honor those who are living veterans that we have today in the military who have fought foreign wars. On this dive, like, you know, since for our day off tomorrow and that in remembrance, at least we have a good day for playing games, whatever. And what we have right now is this little podcast right here to actually, you know, discuss all these things. We have lots of things to discuss in here, whatever. I mean, we have the Xbox One revealed, of course, the Wii U focused Nintendo Direct. Just a touch up, just a little bit on each of these issues, whatever, but I'm assuming everybody here watched the Xbox One reveal.
I naturally did, yes.
Yes.
Seeking out what the competition's doing.
Definitely.
Of course, we'll be getting more and more back into, like, you know, the, like, what we think of the Xbox One and what it means for the Wii U, and, of course, its, you know, sluggish start out into this next-generation consoles, but we have a next-gen podcast to actually get to it. So, Lewis, what you been playing?
I'll start with the most recent game I've picked up. It was the Wii U edition of Resident Evil Revelations. This only came out a couple of days ago. It's, as our listeners are probably well aware, it's the new HD version of the 3DS game, which came out last year. What a lot of people are excited about from Revelations is it's kind of a return to form for Resident Evil, and it's a nice balance between Resident Evil 4 action adventure type gameplay and the more classic Resident Evil 1 to freeze. What's different about the Wii U version? Obviously, it's got the HD graphics, but for the Wii U edition itself, you've got the gamepad integration, and it works in a similar way to how the split screens work on the DS, so you can have your inventory on the touchscreen as well as a map, and you've got these kind of hotspots around the screen where you can switch your grenades and your other weapons and such. Also, what's quite interesting is they've linked it up to online service, ResidentEvil.net. Tracks your Resident Evil statistics, so how many zombies you've killed and how long you've been playing the game, and there's some sort of rewards and perks which gets fed back into the game and onto the website. So it'll be interesting to see how Capcom updates this service. And
I see, I noticed it was, well, I missed out on the 3DS version, which at the time was an exclusive for the handheld, and, you know, it's nice to see this get a little bit of an update right now. I mean, I feel like it was, it was one of those first few titles to kind of finally push the 3DS out, you know, like, get its tires moving a little bit, and, you know, it was a good success, whatever, as far as, like, financially. I mean, you know, something I kind of wished to picked up, but after the console version was announced, I kind of pushed away to actually, you know, maybe get this console version. I mean, Scott, have you played the 3DS version at all? I mean, have you have any interest in actually picking up a console version?
I have not played the 3DS version. I'm not sure which one I'd want to pick up, though. I mean, I love the Wii U version and kind of the upgrades and so on, but I'm really more of almost on a handheld kick right now, so I think that if I got it, I'd probably go for the 3DS version, just so I could play it out and about. But I don't know. I mean, I might pick it up for the Wii U, too. So, but either way, it's something that's been on my list, and it's just not something I've really picked up yet so far.
I mean, it's one of those few titles that I really wish I would have picked up right now, but again, I'm probably a bit more prone to get to that console version, and you know what Lewis had said as far as these new additions to this, like, you know, console version, of course, with the semi kind of, well, remake of it. I mean, I feel like if you want to put as far as a remake, I feel like more time has to come away from, like, you know, the original release. But in the case of this, it's just I mean, like I said, Lewis, this, from what I've seen from videos and even reviews, this is kind of a return to form as far as that what we saw with, like, I'd even go as far as, like, past, like, around 3 or 2 or so. I mean, I mean, 4 remains one of my favorite games of all time. Resident Evil 4 remains one of my favorite games of all time. It just, that was, I feel like, at that point, the last good main Resident Evil game out there, because it, at least, it teetered the balance between, okay, being an action game, but also survival horror, whereas I believe the other games later on, they've gone more of an action-oriented route and kind of went away from its... went away from what defied the series. I mean, being one of the, like, you know, easily one of the scariest games game series out there.
Yeah, it's definitely true. I mean, obviously, 5 kind of started this trend beyond, obviously, what happened in 4 in terms of it took the kind of the action and set-piece elements from 4 and just really ran with that idea even a lot further away from the survival horror parts which were in 4. And 6 did it to another level entirely. It is not really that 5 and 6 are bad games. I mean, I know they get a lot of bad press. It's just because they're not really Resident Evil games. They're kind of these action epic set-piece games in this Resident Evil wrapper, but they're not really Resident Evil games. They're not survival horror in the slightest. But they, for what they are, action adventure games, they are very good. But where Resident Evil Revelations comes into play is it is this return to form. If you are craving the old Resident Evil type game experiences, this is where you're going to find it. It plays like 4, but it's also in parts as scary as some of the earlier Resident Evil games, and it is quite nice to actually be scared from a Resident Evil game. Whereas I was playing 6 recently, and you're just like running from one scene to another with no kind of trepidation of, you know, not wanting to go into that next room because you know there are a bunch of zombies there and you don't have enough ammo to take a single one of them out.
It is, and you know, I was actually, I didn't realize that the series came out, whatever, I mean, Revelations, the console version came out around the same time as the one here in the States, so, yeah, that's one I probably will, I mean, given how I'm getting a little tired, well, not tired right now, I mean, the only thing I've been playing on my Wii U right now has been Super Metroid, so, and I, with that being out there for like 30 cents until the middle of June right now, I joke on there saying, hey, this is currently the best game on the Wii U at the moment. I mean,
to be fair, I know you joke about it, but it's such a good game. I wouldn't be ashamed of someone announcing that was the best game the system had to offer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's still... It's a,
it's
still
a timeless
fairly...
classic.
Yeah, and it has aged practically well. I mean, I could probably say the same couldn't be really said about the original Metroid, which has a footnote in, you know, gaming history as far as, like, when it came to being open world and having, a like, you know, one of the very first password systems. But looking back on it, I mean, it's one of those few titles that has not really aged as well, and when you go back at it, you kind of see its flaws. But it's by no means not a bad game. It just, it's not one of those games like, say, the original Legend of Zelda or Super Mario Brothers, where it's kind of a timeless title where you can just pick up and play and, you know, enjoy for what it is. I mean, for Metroid, it's features in various video games is that you kind of can pick a part of it right now. But, I mean, but aside from that, I mean, has there been anything else you've been playing, Lewis?
Yeah, the game I've been playing is Fire Emblem Awakening. Now, I did mention my progress on this on the last show, but I've had a kind of a change of heart in Fire Emblem Awakening, and I've started up a new save file.
I was about to say, I'm like, what, you are finding bad flaws with this game?
No, certainly not. I start the game again, and I'm using the classic mode where you have the permadeath turned on. And actually, the reason I had this change of heart, or one of the reasons, is we had some DLC come out. It's kind of this infamous DLC, which we also mentioned on last week's show, which was censored in America. And the same DLCs came out in Europe, and apparently it's not. So I wanted to see what all the fuss was about, and it was at that point I realised I never recruited that one character which all the fuss is about. So that gave me an excuse to start the game over again with the correct way, as the developers would say, with the permadeath turned on. And I've got back to where I was before. To be fair, I've also now played the DLC which was censored in America, and it's not censored in Europe. So it's the same as, it's got the same art as the Japanese version. And I can now say there was a huge amount of fuss made over hardly anything. Basically, there's been a lot of fuss on the internet about this piece of art which shows up in one of the... It's not even a cutscene, but it's an image when you're talking to someone in this. And it shows up for about 4 lines of text. And then once you've scrolled through those 4 lines of text, it disappears. It's not like it's saved to a gallery or anything like that. And so even if you didn't have this character recruited like I didn't have originally, you wouldn't have even known. So it's strange how these things travel around the internet.
It does, and, you know, like we said the last podcast, Nintendo has a very odd history of, you know, censoring even, like, the most minute of things, like, be it, you know, when it comes to language, or even just the small spattering of blood, or even just a snatch of, like, cleavage, for instance, which is what is explained right here, whatever, in this Fire Emblem DC, which, in the case of this one, for the American audience, it's kind of made worse, as in what the woman's behind, like, you know, the character's behind is covered, but not with clothing, but with a curtain, so it makes it look like as if she's probably not wearing anything underneath this curtain, so it makes it a little bit more risque. I mean, basically what they tried to correct is what they made it worse.
Yeah,
I also like the argument where some people are saying it's not only does it not look like a curtain, it looked like someone's cape who has just walked into the scene.
Yeah, sometimes
it just walks in.
sometimes when they censor stuff like this, it actually makes it so much worse. And, you know, like you said, it's probably something that would have never even really been noticed or even commented on. But unfortunately, we get to the point where they censor it. It becomes this huge, huge deal and out of nothing, unfortunately. But hopefully, you know, we'll get to the point where they stop censoring minute little things like that. It'd also be kind of cool to have, you know, maybe in the future, if there's something like this that Nintendo wants to censor, or if a developer wants to censor or whatnot, maybe go by the age of the player. If I'm signed in under my Nintendo ID, just let it go. I mean, I'm definitely old enough to you know, be able to handle a scene like that. But, you know, if my young daughter is playing it, maybe because her account is a younger age, maybe censor it on there.
The thing is that, Scott, whatever, I mean, for something like that, I mean, yeah, what you're getting to is like, okay, that'd be a good thing to correct it, but the thing is, there's a lot of people who could easily lie about their age on things.
That's true,
like
that's true, definitely. And I think that's where it kind of comes into, like, you know, the parents and so on, setting it up. Honestly, even with my daughter, something like that, I wouldn't even need to have it censored. I mean, but if Nintendo feels, or if the developer feels, that might be something they might think of in the future, but as it stands, I think that it's perfectly fine how it is, without any sort of censorship or whatnot, as Lewis had pointed out. So, but, you know, we'll see in the future. Hopefully they stop censoring us here in the United States for some of these minor things.
I hope so too. I mean, it just seems very silly to do things like this, unless it's just like blatant, kind of like really, really bad. Like, you know, where you could say, I mean, we've seen things of censorship out there. I mean, look back into, like, you know, what was it, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, for instance, like the scene where in the Russian airport where you basically go in a, like, you know, a killing spree. There was even in the American, that was banned. I believe that was banned for Russian audiences as well, but where everywhere else you were given an option at the beginning of the game where to say there was a warning saying there was a controversial, like, you know, level in this game where that you can choose to either skip or to, you know, still have the game. And at that point, whatever, I mean, I wasn't really bothered by it. I mean, it was a gruesome scene, but in the grand scheme of things like that, it just is a vital part of the story. But back to Fire Emblem Awakening, whatever, I mean, how is the DLC with the game right now, Lewis?
The actual DLC missions are actually quite fun. It's good how it's all under the assumption it's not actually part of the story, and it's somehow explained. They're going through this portal to another universe, or as explainable as that, so they can come up with any sort of silly plot they can think of, and there's a lot of humour involved in the DLC content. I would recommend the different episodes, and it's also interesting to see that they have separate DLC packs to increase certain statistics. For example, there's one focusing around leveling up your characters, and there's one focusing around getting money. So it's interesting to see Nintendo going into this area where it's a step away from almost purchasing in-game money.
Interesting. I mean, and this DLC is fairly cheap. I know that you were dealing with the monetary system, whatever, over in Britain, but these are retailing for around, at least for here, probably $10, but how much is it going over for right now in Europe?
Well, you can buy them in packs of three, or you can buy them individually. So if you buy them separately, they're only a couple of pounds each. So I'd imagine it's a couple of dollars on your side. Or you can buy them in packs of three, and you save a pound or two. So it doesn't cost much, and especially For the example I gave about being similar to, say, an iPhone game where you can buy your own money, if you buy that DLC chapter which lets you get lots of money by playing through it, you can buy that the once, and then you can play that as many times as you want to kind of farm money if you so choose to. It's not going to ask you to pay an extra pound every time you want to farm some money. So it's interesting to see Nintendo exploring these different kind of revenue streams, and I think they're going to be looking closely on which content's selling the most, whether they're the story-related additional chapters, or they're the ones for users to help level up their characters.
I say, very. I mean, it's good to see that they're putting, I mean, DLC for a game like this, whatever. I mean, and it's going to show. It goes to show that, you know, how good the success of Fire Emblem Awakening has been, you know, for each of the territories right now for on the 3DS. And interesting thing that I'd read this week was one of the series creators of Fire Emblem mentioned that this could have been the last Fire Emblem game in the States if it did not meet a certain sales number for right now. And since the game, I believe, is sold around between, like, 250,000 or 400,000 copies were sold, and if it did not meet that, that could have been, like, you know, their last little experiment putting this, you know, series in the States, as the previous versions have not met sales demands. I mean, it's still gone by being just a cult classic Nintendo franchise. And, you know, thankfully that, you know, good word of mouth from this game, like, from critics, was able to actually, you know, move a couple good more units than usual. So it's good to see that the series is actually having a little bit more stability. But I think the reasoning why, when they mentioned the creators mentioned that this was going to be the last game, you know, possibly here in the States, was they basically put almost all their effort into this game to make it such a good experience, you know, just in case that they were just gonna, you know, be it like, let it be the series' swan song. But luckily now, with it being, you know, financially stable, we're hopefully to get some more, like, you know, games in the Fire Emblem series.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what they can do next with the Fire Emblem universe on the 3DS or even on the Wii U. But what I would like them to do, make a slight diversion and do a new Advance Wars before they tackle the next Fire Emblem project.
I totally agree. I mean, Advance Wars, which I mentioned with Scott and Eugene on our top 25, you know, Nintendo games of all time. I had fought hard and hard to get, you know, Advance Wars into our top 25, and luckily it made like our low 25, like the low end of the 20s. So, and to me, it's still one of the few games that I've played in my history as a gamer that surprised me, where I went in basically blind. You know, not knowing anything about the whole series. That's one I'd like to see it being tackled again. Now, Scott, you mentioned that you were on a handheld bend right now. I mean, so I take it that most of your gaming, what you've been playing right now, has been on your 3DS or your iOS device?
Well, for the most part. Now, I haven't had a lot of time to actually do a lot of gaming overall, but I have played a little bit of Zombie U, to kind of focus on the Wii a bit here. One of my daughters and myself have been kind of playing that in two-player mode, Capture the Flag, and I've realized, you know, I'm horrible at playing Capture the Flag, and she's really good at placing all the zombies right on top of me. You know, I kind of continue to let her win, and because, well, I wasn't letting her win. She was just beating me like crazy. So...
Oh, you like be the good father you are, and just actually, you know, let your daughter win. I mean, that's what any good parent should do.
No. If I'm playing her, she's going down. But she legitimately got me, so I'll give her that one. Other than that, she's been playing Epic Mickey 2, so I haven't actually been playing it, but I've been kind of watching her play it, and I never really played Epic Mickey 1 fully through, so watching her play Epic Mickey 2, it's you know, I want to actually finish Epic Mickey 1. I actually never even opened and put Epic Mickey 2 in the Wii U, just because I wanted to finish the first one first, but now I'm kind of itching for that, so I might switch over to the Wii U. But over on the 3DS, I've been playing the Final Fantasy Heroes of Light. And it's not the best in the series, but it's okay. You've got 15 slots in each character's inventory. That counts your weapons too. So if you have a shield, armor, a sword, for example, you know, then you've really only got 12 more slots for healing potions and whatever else you have. So I'm really taking my time on that one. I'm not really liking it right now, but it's kind of a throwback, and it's working my way through the Final Fantasy series, so figured I'd go ahead and work that in after I beat 5 on the iOS. So kind of working on that, and I've also got the opportunity to get to demo the Groove Heaven before it was launched. So played that. It's actually a pretty decent little rhythm game. Basically, the storyline is that the devil falls in love with an angel up in heaven and sends a little demon to climb the stairs or to climb the tower to send a note up to her. So I did a short little review on Infendo about it. It's a nice little game. One thing I should have done that I just realized yesterday is I should have went through the options and settings before I posted my review. One of my complaints was that the two controls that are on the touchscreen, the turn around and the move forward buttons, they're not really that reactive when you touch them on the screen. I don't know if it's maybe my 3DS is overused or if it's just the way the game is, but I complain that you should have been able to use the buttons, and you actually can if you go in and change the settings. So my bad there, but I still give it 4 out of 5 stars. It's a pretty decent little game. The music is pretty catchy. I wish they would have kind of changed the music per level up a bit, but overall, nice little game, and I've been kind of playing that kind of casually over on and on.
I'll say I've heard about that title in particular, but I've heard from a few of my friends who've kind of generally, well, casually, you know, not, no pun intended, mentioned to pick myself up, whatever. But I mean, and that kind of leads into what you've been playing, which has been basically, well, I haven't had time at the moment right now. I mean, I picked up Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon a little bit more. Got through I'm now currently on the 4th mansion on this one, and of course, it made me think about the title, whatever. I mean, to kind of go in the alien to aliens route, why can't we just call it like Luigi's Mansions? You know, just go with it on there or whatever. But I mean, that's a little nitpick on there and a bad joke on my part. But gotten through that, and just, you know, even if I have my downtime and just kind of tooling around my 3DS for a little bit, and again, from Eugene's request, I have not picked up Pushmon. I believe the sale for that is already over at the moment, which I'm kind of kicking myself over it. Were you about to say something, Scott?
Just kind of sympathizing for you there, not picking it up. I haven't either, so I mean, it's something that was on my radar, and I think I might wait a little while longer if it has stopped.
I was about to say that it felt like you were just like, oh, why? You should have picked it up. Like that little gasp of air, like last gasp of air that you just
It was for both of us.
Lewis, have you played Pushmo at all?
Now, you're going to have to remind me if this is the first one or the second one, because
it's the first one.
Okay. As you probably know, all the eShop titles get different names in all the different regions for some reason or another.
Because I know Luigi's Mansion is, I believe it's known as Luigi's Mansion 2 over in
Europe. Oh, it is, yeah. That's a retail title, which they normally keep the same names, so. But yeah, but that's 2 over here. But a lot of the eShop-only games, for some odd reason, do have a different name in every region.
I mean, it's very interesting. Like, for instance, what was it? I mean, I always like the translations for different cities, for titles. Not necessarily the mistranslations, but, like, for instance, well, Super Mario Bros. 2, for instance, I mean, North American version, which was known as Doki Doki Panic, is known as Super Mario Bros. USA in Japan, and I believe Donkey Kong Country was known as Super Donkey Kong over in Japan. So these are little interesting things that they, you know, change up. And but
yeah, to actually answer your question of that slight detour, I did pick up the original. I played it for a bit, but I never got into it, really. So I think I must have been stuck on the long tutorial missions that I heard about afterwards. It just seemed a bit too simplistic.
What, long tutorial missions?
They didn't seem to be tutorial missions, but I found afterwards there was about 50 of them or so. And apparently it gets even worse on the second game, but I have heard really great things about it, so I have heard it's definitely worth picking up.
I mean, we have titles like that where you, I mean, if there's one thing that annoys me through different titles, whatever, I mean, it's the vaguely long, like, you know, tutorial, but, like, lessons that they give you. I mean, like, the ones that I could probably get out there are just ones I would rather not mention. Given how I have not been playing right now, like, any games at the moment, we did have a Nintendo Direct about, not last Friday, but 2 Fridays ago, and Nintendo was kind of came out of the blue a little bit. It was announced, I believe, about a day or two before its initial, like, you know, presentation, and this Nintendo Direct was detailing basically the summer Wii U and 3DS lineup that we have. Just to kind of go through each of what Nintendo has announced here, what we first had in the Direct was a, you know, unprecedented partnership with Sega. One of the first titles in there was Mario and Sonic at the Winter Olympic Games, and a new 3D Sonic title, Sonic Lost World. Now, this partnership, whatever, with Sega, they announced that there were going to be three Sonic games, one of which was unannounced, and a couple rumors that I'd heard about this one was Sonic All-Stars Racing and Mario Kart Crossover. I mean, this, of course, is just stuff I've been hearing through the grapevine as far as rumors. To start in the Sega partnership, as Wii U owners right now, it's not the brightest of, like, moments that we have with a console at the moment right now, and would this partnership be, as far as with Sega, to have Sonic the Hedgehog exclusively on Nintendo, the consoles and its handheld, would this help be, like, the first step as far as helping the Wii U?
I don't know about it helping the Wii U specifically, at this time, but I think it's something that is maybe a long-term help for Nintendo directly. I know that, Eugene and I joke around back and forth where, you know, Eugene is not a fan of Sonic for the most part. I actually like Sonic. I mean, back from the Sega Genesis days, you know, it was one of my favorite games on the Sega Genesis. And I think that a partnership between Sega and Nintendo with a character that's so iconic for Sega is a huge, huge step. I mean, you're looking at two companies here that were bitter enemies at one time. I mean, their campaigns and commercials against were actually against each other. It wasn't, you know, buy Nintendo because, or buy Sega because. It's don't buy Nintendo because we're better. They really, really, you know, fought it out for a while. And to see the two companies come together and really, you know, bring Sonic back to life, basically, and on a Nintendo nonetheless, that shows me two things. I think, one, it shows me that Sega, who is now a third-party developer, is basically siding and putting their money on Nintendo for this generation of consoles. So it shows me that, you know, whether this is going to be a big jump in the Wii U sales or not, I don't know, but Sega seems to think that Nintendo is going to be, you know, the console to go on in this generation. And Sonic is a perfect fit for the Nintendo line of characters such as Mario and Donkey Kong and so on. He just fits really well in there. I would like to see a lot more exclusives, not just exclusivity, not just the Sonic portion of it. But I think Sonic is a really good start here. And it may get other developers to look here, too. I mean, Sega's been around for a very long time. And if Sega's doing this, where this might come into play and actually helping the Wii U is you might have some of these other developers out there that are looking at Sega and seeing that they're making this leap. Is this something that we should do, too? Maybe take one title, bring it, you know, maybe not even exclusive, but maybe test an exclusivity over at Nintendo and see how it does. So I think it's a good move. I think we'll definitely have to wait and see, since it's, you know, nothing. They're not actually out yet. And as for far as a third game in the Sonic series, I would like a Sonic All-Stars / Mario Kart crossover. I don't know if that would be, you know, necessary. I think that what we would get is probably just a huge, huge Mario Kart. But I think it would be kind of cool, especially if they did something like they do with, like, the Pokemon games, like Pokemon X, Pokemon Y, do the Sega and the Mario Kart kind of both, you know, separately, but have some portions of the games that can intertwine and trade racers and stuff like that. So I don't know, though. I mean, hopefully I would like to see a much bigger Sonic episode, kind of like one of the new Marios that are coming out. So what are your thoughts, Lewis or Harrison?
Well, I think Nintendo's quite clever in getting this partnership together. We obviously don't know how far it's going to stretch beyond these three games, if at all. Currently, it's all about growing this initial user base for the Wii U. And Sonic games do shift quite a lot, even the really bad ones. They do sell really well. So it's a very good move getting at least these three games exclusive for the Wii U, because there will be people out there who don't have Wii Us who will pick up the system purely based on a Sonic title. From the two titles we've seen so far, obviously we got Mario and Sonic at the Winter Olympic Games, which is a mixed bag by the looks of it. It looks like it's keeping a lot of the simplistic gameplay from the Wii titles, but the graphics don't look too bad, so it could be positive. Yeah, it could be a fun party game, and it does use a mix of Wii remotes and the Wii U gamepad. I'm always up to having an extra a party game in my Wii stable, so I'm going to keep my eye on the Olympic Games title. As Sonic Lost World goes, all they've shown is a single piece of art, and admittedly this piece of art does look very nice. It's got Sonic on Tails' biplane riding towards this broken planet made up of these like hexagon shapes, and it looks quite reminiscent of a more traditional 2D Sonic game in terms of you have very fantasy type areas. So you have like a forest world and a desert world, and it looks like a volcano world, where most of the previous Sonic games have taken place in a more real life setting with cities and cars and other real life environments. So it's nice to see them going back to the more traditional Sonic setting. And they did say it's going to be a 3D platformer, like action adventure or something along those lines. Hopefully Sega just bring their A game with this, and if we get a really AAA Sonic 3D game to return Sonic to form, it'd be absolutely fantastic that Nintendo's managed to get this a Nintendo exclusive, because there will be a lot of attention around this title, even if there is a new 3D Mario game in a similar window.
One thing you mentioned as far as that piece of art is that it kind of reminded me as far as kind of a planetoid that you'd see in the Mario Galaxy series. And I'm thinking, like, is you know, Sega wanting to borrow some of these ideas that the Galaxy titles have, you know, have well established. And, you know, going from the Mario and Sonic and Winter Olympic Games, titles which I really found no interest in, even though they're just simple party games. But, I mean, again, they're just a quick cash-in. I mean, they have their audience to play for, and of course, this wouldn't be the type of game to get Wii U, like, consoles moving, like, units moving. And in the terms of, like, you know, Sonic Lost World, the 3D Sonic titles have not really had the best track record, probably past, like, you know, Sonic Adventure 2. I mean, this is Sonic is a character that I've felt, you know, had such a dominance in the 1990s, and it just kind of fallen from grace into, like, from the 2000s into the early 2010s. And it's essentially a character that's, you know, a shadow of its former self. But with this partnership with Nintendo, I really hope that they kind of help jumpstart the character a little bit more and bring more life into it, like, you know, making Sonic a bit more relevant. I feel like, you know, what was it, Sonic the Hedgehog, the 2006 console version from the 360 and the PlayStation 3, I felt that was kind of like one of the few final nails in the coffin to that series, you know, how buggy it was, and how ridiculous its story was, and just how almost unplayable it seemed. And in the same time, it's just, hopefully, you know, maybe there can be, like, you know, you have Sega hand over, like, Sonic to one of, like, EAD, or even, like, you know, oh boy, Intelligent Systems or anything like that, if you want to do, like, a really, like, updated, like, 2D or 3, like, handheld-based version. It's just, With EA kind of, like, going back and forth between, you know, we are supporting and we are not supporting, we are supporting, you know, like, games for the console, hopefully with this character, with Sonic, whatever, this isn't, like, the last as far as, like, Sega partnerships. I mean, who knows? Maybe, like, this could be, like, maybe the Wii U could be a good platform to revive, like the Panzer Dragoon series, or even, you know, revive Shenmue 3. I mean, any of these that actually, you know, bring all these different, like, you know, catalog of franchises that Sega has, I mean, could be good for Nintendo's advantage.
No, most definitely. I think one of the reasons why they'll be choosing Sonic first is it's very safe. Again, as I said earlier, even the bad Sonic games seem to sell really well. Nintendo getting the exclusivity on these three, I think both Nintendo and Sega are going to watch this closely. And if it's promising, I think either party is going to be interested in extending this and growing their relationship.
Completely agree.
I hope so, too, and it's just like, yeah, you said, it's Sonic is a safe character, even though it doesn't have that very huge popular, like, you know, game buster as far as, like, popularity in terms of sales, like it used to have, you know, for years ago, but, like I said, hopefully, you know, Nintendo has a ways, you know, to actually, you know, jumpstart this character. Moving on, you know, aside from what else was in the Nintendo Direct, we also got an announced, like, a release date for the Zelda Oracle games, which will be releasing for the 3DS Virtual Console on May 30th. And Nintendo had also mentioned that for the first month of the game's release on the 3DS Virtual Console, they will be retailing for $4 as opposed to $5. For that month, whatever, we'll be able to get both titles for, you know, either for $8 as opposed to $10. And Nintendo did clear up saying that one of the main features of those two original Game Boy Color titles was that you could link them up and have, you know, a true end boss. Will you guys be picking this up probably when it comes out?
Myself, probably not. For me, I've got both of them on the Game Boy still. And after I finish the Final Fantasy series up to probably 13, probably up to Lightning Returns, is I'm guessing about where I'll get, unless they release Versus 13, which is probably doubtful for this year. But then I'm going to start on the Zelda series from one and kind of go through the timeline, take the split and go, you know, with each split at that point. And for me, I think I'll play these on the, I'll continue to play these on the Game Boy, just because it's classic. These are titles, I mean, even though I love the Zelda series, I don't know if I'd really want to make that jump. Maybe I will, but as of right now, I probably won't.
I'm on their hand, I barely played the Oracle games when I got the, when they released back in 2001, I believe. I barely got through, like, you know, about Ages and Seasons, and I loaned them back to a friend of mine. I never did see the light of day. Like, they never did see the light of day in my Game Boy ever again. But this one, I think, would be a good nice little, like, nostalgia trip to handheld Zelda titles. And plus, I never got a chance to finish them as well. So, but, Lewis, would you be picking them up?
I think to be fair, I'd probably pick them up just for the sake of growing my virtual console collection. But I can't remember which version it was, but I did pick one of these up originally, and I got a couple of dungeons in, and I must have got distracted by something else, as often these things happen. One of my favourite Zelda games is Link's Awakening, and obviously these games, although not quite the same, they are very reminiscent of Link's Awakening, although made by Capcom, I believe?
Yes, Capcom did actually co-develop this one as well, along with, I believe, they helped out with the A Link to the Past on the Game Boy Advance.
It builds on top of the Link's Awakening engine, and Capcom kind of ran with it and developed it into their own. But yeah, these are very interesting to me because of how kind of similar they are to Link's Awakening, but I think I'll pick one up for now and see how that goes before I pick up the second one.
I do too, and you know, I need to grow my virtual console library on there, and you know, one of the few first tiles I'm going to be buying is Donkey Kong 94, one of my favorite Game Boy titles of all time, you know, something that I actually built upon for, like, you know, the original Donkey Kong, but also took it a step further as far as, you know, expanding it into a really grand adventure title. And, you know, it's good to see actually a couple of these different Game Boy Color and Game Boy original Game Boy titles actually make it there. Moving on more, and I'm just going to go through all these different announcements that the Direct had. DLC for New Super Mario Bros. U, titled New Super Luigi U. One of the characters that will be replacing Mario in the multiplayer mode will be the character by Nabbit. The character, of course, is invincible, but can't use power-ups. I believe the character is going to be used more for, like, the casual player out there who is having more, a little bit difficult playing the game. And, of course, we know that with New Super Mario Bros. U, later on the levels, it got quite a bit difficult going on. The release for this on DLC is June 20th, but also for $20. But also, if there'll be a retail version for $30 as well, which will be releasing sometime in August. Pikmin 3 was shown some new footage as well, and Captain Olimar is, correct me if I'm wrong, three different new main characters by the name of Alf, Brittany, and Charlie. The game, of course, will have off-TV play, multiplayer is confirmed, and Nintendo mentioned that more details will be coming later, I guess, until E3. And we now have a solid release date for a game that should, I believe, wished, launched along, like, released at the launch of the Wii U, and its release date is August 4th. Speaking about other release dates, Platinum Games' The Wonderful 101 will be available on September 15th. One thing that bothers me about that release date is it releases the same week as GTA 5. That worries me as far as, like, you know, it getting lost in GTA 5's hype. In addition, E3 games will be playable at Best Buy. So any game that I believe that is going to be shown on the E3 show floor by Nintendo will be made playable at various Best Buys across the country in North America and Canada.
Yeah, I think just to clarify that, I believe they've limited it to 100 Best Buy locations, but I don't believe those have been announced just yet. So hopefully they expand it, but I think as of the conference, it was just 100 locations.
Best Buy was very finicky, like when the Wii U launched. I was assuming that it was going to be like a store-wide midnight launch, but there were only very few stores across the country that actually had it. There was not even one in the state of Missouri that was, like, where I live, where they had a midnight launch. And they had even Best Buys in Wyoming and Nebraska, even Kansas, where they had midnight launches. And I'm just thinking, like, well, what's the deal here? In hindsight, I got my console either way, but I just like participating, like, the thrill of, like, midnight launches. To round out this Nintendo Direct, Yakuza 1 and 2 will be made available on the Wii U, but in Japan. I'm not familiar with that series. Are any of you guys?
I am not 100% familiar. I mean, I've heard of it. I've seen a little bit of gameplay here and there, but it's not one that I've really delved into pretty deeply.
What about you, Lewis?
I unfortunately can't help you out any more than Scott has there. It's a series I've heard of, and I've seen screenshots of it. I know it does fairly well in Japan and not so well over here.
Yeah, I have heard of it as well, but I've never got a chance to actually, you know, sit down and, well, look at videos or, like, you know, gameplay footage. That was one thing that kind of bothered me, this Direct that is only being made available in Japan. I mean, but to put in the whole thing about this Nintendo Direct is, I kind of went in expecting, you know, a bombshell announcement like we had got at the first Nintendo Direct at the beginning of 2013 with, you know, Wind Waker HD, the announcement that Mario Kart, Smash Brothers, and even the new 3D Mario title would be made available at E3, and of course, you know, Monolith Soft's new title, like, RPG X. I guess I was lifting, like, of my expectations a little bit high on this Direct, and of course, this Direct kind of came right at the day after when the announcement from EA that they had no Wii U titles in development, which, of course, that retracted from a week later when, of course, whatever, when through EA came up saying that they were developing titles for the Wii U, but in a limited capacity in favor of actually, you know, taking advantage of both the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One software. Looking through this entire stuff that went through, this last Nintendo Direct, did anything exactly, you know, aside from the Sega partnership?
Right. I think my take on this Direct, I mean, because it was rather unannounced, like you said, a day or two before it actually happened, I think this might have been kind of reactive to EA's announcement and basically saying that, sure, EA is saying that they are not going to develop any games for us, but we have a lot of stuff coming out that we don't need EA for. This is a lot of stuff that we have in the works. You know, the Sega partnership is probably one of the bigger announcements here, and maybe that was specifically put in here to battle EA kind of announcement there. Maybe this is something they were going to hold off until later, but pulled it out of their back pocket at this time. And also looking at EA, I would almost guess, and this is just a prediction on my side, the games that they have that they came back and retracted and said that we do have a very limited number of games in development for the Wii U, I would almost bet that those are going to be the Star Wars games. Nintendo and Disney have a very good rapport between the two of them, and my guess is that Disney will not allow them to skip over this Wii U console. I mean, they're both, Nintendo's a family-friendly console. Disney is obviously a family-friendly company. So that's my prediction for EA. But kind of getting back to the Nintendo Direct, I think that this is probably because of that EA announcement, and they were just being a little bit reactive to it. But they have announced that on June 11th, the next Nintendo Direct will pop up. So I'm pretty excited for that one.
I am as well, and, you know, it kind of starts to begin, like, the hype train that gets the lead up to it right now, because we're obviously going to be seeing more of, well, Monolith Soft's X, a new Mario Kart, a 3D Mario, and, you know, a first reveal of Super, like, the new next generation of the Smash Brothers series. I mean, is there anything else into this, whatever, to you, Lewis, like, that really kind of jumped out?
One thing that I kind of took away, I think a lot of people overlooked, is simply the new Pikmin 3 coverage. It was all new footage they were showing, and they also showed, I believe for the first time, but I could be mistaken here, what is actually on the gamepad screen, or at least the new layout for what is on the gamepad screen. I believe this is a new feature they showed off. in which you can, through the gamepad, you can make the camera go from a completely top-down view opposed to a more 45-degree view it is normally, and you can scroll around the map on the gamepad, and it looks very reminiscent of a controlling strategy game on a PC, where you can move that little box camera around on your mini-map, and it moves around the real-world map. So it's interesting to see Pikmin viewed at this angle, and using the same mechanic, you can jump between the three different main characters, and you can tell them to do certain tasks for the Pikmin, and then leave them alone so you can be jumping from one to the other. And on your big overview map on your gamepad, you can see the different routes the Pikmin are taking, either going to attack enemies or bringing back pellets to the onion. I'm more confident than ever now that Pikmin 3 is actually going to be a fantastic fit for the Wii U.
I believe so as well, and, you know, I think kind of going away from this direct, you know, obviously we'd seen, you know, titles that we'd already known, like, you know, information well ahead. Of course, this was just meant as far as, like, you know, to showcase, you know, summer software for the 3DS and Wii U, and I believe that this is, you know, Nintendo's way of getting this information out of the way, you know, to lead up to more these other directs that should be coming up, you know, before and during E3, which, you know, Nintendo's doing in replace of just a major press conference. I mean, time and time again from different, like, press conferences they had, there was a lot of time eaten up from, like, titles that we'd already seen before, like, you know, like, months in advance, and of course, you know, hopefully with this information already out the door, this gives a little bit more room to discuss other projects that Nintendo is working with. I mean, one rumor that was kind of circulating through, it was a few rumors of clarifying, like, what different directs are going to be shown during E3. There's quite a lot on there. I mean, I'm taking it with a huge grain of salt, but there's various different directs, one that's focused on the 3DS, one that's on the Wii U, and then there's various Iwata asks that are going to be planned during that, one of which is through the makers of Monolith Soft, and of course for Retro Studios' next game, which, you know, I believe we will say for another podcast to discuss what this next title is going to be, because it is still my number one most wanted title to when it comes to this E3, and it will disappoint me very, very much if for some way, somehow, it does not show up at E3, because if that does, I may have to make a trip to Austin, Texas, and bang on the door at Retro Studios' office and demand what is going on, because we've obviously been waiting far too long to, you know, see what their next project's going to be. I honestly believe this is just, you know, this direct is a matter of just, let's get this other information that we know it's coming out from summer away, and then once E3 comes along, this will get the information on what to expect in the fall. A lot of these different rumored, like, directs, I mean, if this really is true as far as how many directs they're going to have and how many of these different versions of, like, you know, segments of Iwata Ask they're going to have, and also, what was it, in addition, there's going to be an extended Pokemon X and Y segment that I believe Nintendo is going to discuss during E3 as well. But if this is true as far as how many of these directs and Iwata Asks they're going to have, then kind of it helps me justify, you know, the decision to do away with the press conference. They obviously want to have more of these different events to kind of spread out information as far as, like, not to focus on, like, three or five minute segments of a press conference of just one title, or that, or somebody demoing it.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to see how they actually pull off the Nintendo Direct in kind of replacement of the big show. I think it has the potential to be better than their live shows, just because then it's not live and they can have the game footages be exactly what they want. So we're going to have this a lot more focused and edited show, which just gets to the main points that we actually want to see. So I'm going to be cautiously optimistic on this one. I think they can pull it off, and think that we won't be kind of so disheartened this time next year that it will be another Nintendo Direct opposed to a big E3 show.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, with E3 coming around the corner right now, with Microsoft and Sony, they're gearing up for their next-gen consoles right now. Last Tuesday, for instance, was the official reveal of Microsoft's next Xbox, which is aptly titled Xbox One. And, like we discussed at the beginning of the show, we all, like, you know, both all of us have checked out, like, you know, watched the live streaming of the show, but going through the laundry list of everything that was shown, I mean, I fairly found it to be an interesting, you know, presentation. Nothing that really blew me away as far as wanting I mean, I'm still going to this generation deciding, you know, what's going to be my second console that's going to go alongside with my Wii U. I mean, for the last generation, I went with a Nintendo and Microsoft combo, which, you know, served me well. The generation before that, I went with a GameCube and a PlayStation 2, and I got along fine with that one as well. I mean, as far as, like, the titles that I enjoyed. But going through this right now, we have so much as far as what we can. There's no release date, like a concrete release date, but Microsoft did mention that it would be out later, in air quotes, later this year. No price as well, but aside from non-game issues that were on that were announced on there, we are getting a Halo TV series that's going to be, you know, produced by Steven Spielberg. Aside from the usual, like, you know, pimping of Call of Duty Ghosts and, you know, the EA Sports franchises, one thing I had to ask for both of you is, what was your opinion of the show overall?
Well, I know that I did a small little review over on Infendo and also on Nerdsy, kind of tied the two of them together by linking to each other. And I think one thing that, just to clarify to some of our listeners and readers out there, is that when I put in the first sentence that the Xbox One presentation was fantastic compared to the PS4 presentation. So I think a lot of people took it as I thought that the Xbox One presentation itself was fantastic. And it was a good presentation for what it was. I mean, I'm not going to bash it and say that it was a horrible presentation and they should have just not done it and so on from there. But what I meant with that is that to me, the PS4 presentation was extremely horrible. They showed us a bunch of tech demos. They didn't show us a console. They told us what it can do, but they didn't really back anything up, and they drew it out for the longest time. Microsoft took the presentation. They put it in, you know, I think it was just under an hour, and they basically told us what it could do. They told us that we know it's a gaming device. We know you all know that it's a gaming device. So for now, we're going to show you what it can do beyond the gaming and save the gaming aspects for E3. And that upset a lot of people because they didn't really focus on the gaming. They focused on a lot of the peripheral aspects of it. For me, the peripheral aspects, the TV, the switching back and forth from TV to video to
the
Blu-ray.
Snap mode.
Exactly. Everything else that it does, I think it was overkill. And in my view of it, they weren't presenting that portion of it to the gamers. They were presenting that portion of it to the Apple fanboys out there. Because with your Apple products, your iPhone communicates, your iPad, your iPhone, or your Mac, your Apple TV, it seems to me that they're trying to get everything that Apple's doing with all of their devices and put it all into this Xbox, and basically saying that, you know, just basically doing that. And I think the presentation itself was pretty good overall as far as how they presented things. Sure, they should have showed a lot more games, and especially all these exclusive IPs that they have coming out and so on. But do we really want them to show that ahead of time and wait until E3? I mean, obviously E3... we want to see the games. We want to see everything that this thing can do as far as gaming goes. The other thing I did like about this, though, is they actually did show us actual gameplay with the Call of Duty Ghost. Now, Call of Duty is not a game that I'm really interested in. I've never really gotten into any of the Call of Duties. I've played them, and I have fun with them with, you know, a group of people, but it's not something I would just pick up and play on my own by myself. But showing actual gameplay was a good thing because they took what they presented us throughout the whole thing, and they did tie it up with a game and a highly anticipated game at that. And unlike PS4, they didn't just show us a trailer, tech demo, or whatnot. They showed us what it actually looks like on the console. So I do give Xbox a thumbs up for the presentation. I think that they probably knew that they were going to get a lot of flack when they presented this, but I think they did it smart. You know, in my personal opinion right now, Wii U has the foothold on the current gen. They released it about a year early than everybody else. They've experienced the bugs that the system has. They've been, you know, very good at fixing those bugs, slow load times, stuff like that. Even though there's still slower load times than we'd like, they're still fixing that. They're doing it incrementally, so they're not screwing up the system with these updates. Xbox is a pretty close second right now. There are a lot of issues that I have with the system. Regardless of how they say it, it is always on. I mean, it's got to connect at least every 24 hours, like you said. And you can't play a game without having the Kinect, hooked up to it, and so on from there. So there's a lot of issues that I have with the console itself. I think that they're trying to do too much all at once. I've compared it to Windows 8. I mean, they released Windows 8, they hyped it up, and now they're releasing Windows 8.1, which is kind of taking it a step backwards to simplify things and bring it back a little bit to where it was before, and work on re-releasing it a little bit more slowly. So I think they should have taken a cue from that, but it might have been too far along in development for them to do that. So overall, that's kind of my view on it. Now, one quick note here, too, kind of find out here, while the podcast was going on, that Xbox One.net and Xbox One.com are not actually owned by Microsoft.
I did hear about this.
So I guess some guy actually purchased them in the United Kingdom about 2 years ago. So right now, Microsoft is actually filed a complaint with the National Arbitration Forum over the domain name. Obviously, that guy had no clue that the next Xbox was going to be the Xbox One. I will guess, though, that he's probably going to make a pretty good profit selling those back to Microsoft. So just thought I'd throw that in there since we're talking about the Xbox here. But what about you, Lewis? I mean, what do you think of the Xbox One presentation?
Okay, Xbox One. I think it's doing better than the PS4 is in terms of what we know about it. As everyone's heard across the internet, it's getting a bad rep that it's not being focused as a games console. As well as all of the consoles which are out now, including the Wii U, they do an awful lot of things in addition to playing games. I mean, it's obviously been proven wrong, but in theory, I think Microsoft made a good move what they did in their announcements. The show was about a month around their E3 show, and they did say at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show that they're going to be showing and focusing on games when E3 comes. And so this was a big opportunity to show off everything else the system does, to give out its name, to show you what the box looks like, to show you the controller, to show you the different TV features, the multitasking, the revealing of the spec details, including the memory, the fact it has a Blu-ray drive, clear out some of the issues in terms of backwards compatibility, the fact that connects in the box, all these sort of things. They take a lot of time to communicate to the user, and so hopefully they don't have to spend so much time reminding everyone what the Xbox One is, because they've already read about it on their in their news outlet of choice, and they can hopefully reel off trailers of these exclusive titles, which they did speak about in terms of numbers at this show, but didn't reveal what the actual titles were going to be. Now, in terms of the actual feature set of the Xbox One, I think it's looking quite good so far. I do like the multitasking view, where you can have one screen showing, say, your Blu-ray video running, and another screen you could be having a Skype call. And they showed that it doesn't take long, it only takes a few seconds to swap between, say, one view to another. In some ways, it has parallels to what the Wii U is currently doing, but it obviously goes about it in a very non-Nintendo way. One of the downsides of moving to the current architecture that it's on, which is an AMD x86, is it's losing its entire backwards compatibility, both disc games and download games, to the 360. In addition to this, it's losing all backwards compatibility to accessories. Now, I've heard it doesn't work with the old Kinect, but that doesn't really matter, because the new Kinect comes in the box. But you can't use your standard controllers as multiplayer controllers, essentially. So say you had a couple of 360 controllers and you're hoping they could be controllers 2, 3 and 4. Fortunately, you're going to have to buy all new controllers, even though the controllers are very similar in functionality. I think that's a shame, and it's probably going to be Microsoft's plan in bringing back in some of the money which of the console they're going to be selling at a loss. But it is a shame that that is the case. Now, ultimately, the reason why I think it's looking better than the PS4, even though purely numbers-wise the specs on the PS4 are a bit better than the Xbox One in terms of it has faster memory, is because they've actually showed gameplay, they've actually shown off some unique functionality. All we really know that the PS4 can do is in terms of sharing your videos or your gameplay, which Microsoft has also confirmed is something you can do on the Xbox One. We could be looking at two incredibly similar consoles, which I think puts Nintendo in a very good position with the Wii U. It's not going to do anyone any good having three consoles exactly the same.
Unless we have, unless those who are very well financed. I mean, I have friends out there who have all three consoles, like, currently right now, and if you would have told me that, like, 10 years ago, I was thinking, like, somebody would have, like, each of the current generation consoles, I'd be thinking, like, my, jeez, I'm like, how much money are you making right now? And it's just like, oh, I just have a part-time job, that's it. It's like, okay, wow.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. I mean, I think both from, like, a financial point of view of who's buying these consoles, obviously they all, the One and the PS4 are going to be fairly expensive. But in terms of just for our own user experience, I'm glad Nintendo's doing their own thing in the corner with their dual-screen gameplay aspects. If all three consoles were the same, fair enough, you're going to have some exclusives on one which aren't on the other, but it is nice to have that variety, and it gives the system its own character, and the fact you're going to have your own game experiences which you can't have on the other systems.
And that's what you just hit that perfectly. I mean, for me, it's all about the experience. And if I have, you know, all three systems, and like you said, if they all react exactly the same, if they have the same games, you know, the individual IPs or the exclusive IPs better be pretty fantastic for me to want to jump and get each of these. And for the handful of IPs or new IPs, especially exclusives that Microsoft says they're going to have, I don't know if that would be worth it for me if it was exactly the same as the other consoles out there. So I do want to have the differences between each of them. And that's one thing I like between, like, say, the 360, the Wii, and the PS3. I mean, with the 360, you have that Kinect, which is different. I don't use it a lot, but it's there, and it's a much better, different experience than using the Wiimotes with the Wii. With the PlayStation, you know, with that, I never actually got out the PS Move and really played with it. I've got the Wonder Book. I haven't even taken it out of the box yet. But it's still, it is a different experience than the other two out there. You know, I have, at this moment, I think the last count was like exactly 50 consoles, and that's different incarnation of the Game Boy and the different Nintendos that have throughout the ages and so on. Obviously, I didn't buy them all brand new. I've had them over the years. I bought them used, extremely discounted, and so on from there. There's a few of them I've even had to kind of piece together out of multiple broken ones. So I will probably get all three of the new next generation. Obviously, I have the Wii U already, but I'll probably get the PS4 and the Xbox One. But it probably won't be at launch. I mean, if I get either of those, for me, it will probably be, you know, a year or two down the line, unless I find a deal on somebody, you know, just got it and didn't like it and wanted to sell it used pretty inexpensively. So, but it's definitely all about it. You know, the power for me, the power is meaningless. If you don't have good games on the console and kind of those differences between them, what's the point of all that power? I mean, you've got to have a good game to back it up.
You know, and what I got from this presentation, though, is that, like both you had mentioned, is that, you know, for those who are wanting games, had to realize that, you know, there's a time and place to show this off. I mean, you know, in most of the presentations like this, you're going to have tech demos, which are going to be very deceptive of how well the game's visuals and power, like, you know, innards are going to be able to produce all these pixels and, you know, polygons. But it's everything that I watched from this is, you know, features that I'm like, yeah, I like all this. But it's like, it's so overwhelming to the point where consoles have forever been, like, well, not forever, but consoles have just been moving evolving at a fast pace to the point of being these, you know, all-in-one entertainment, but, like, you know, entertainment centers, that yet it's going to that point of whether or not, like, this is a console or a PC, because of all these features that you have on here, most of which you could possibly, you know, even, like, you know, why just not just buy a PC? I mean, and this is coming from somebody that has interest in the Xbox One. It's just, I'm now, after watching that, you know, after watching it, I'm going back to my Wii U thinking, like, you know, it's not so bad after all. You know, it's a simplified console that has all these little features that aren't really as much front and center. I mean, what would they have with, like, the Miiverse right now is one of, I feel like, one of its bigger things that I feel like it could take this, you know, the game, the, like, the gameplay experience into a, such a new level. And it does disappoint me that this is not going to be, like, both these will not be backwards compatible, and, you know, we all know that given that, it would probably be a lot more expensive if we're given that, you know, possibility inside the box. But Microsoft did announce, I think this week, or it was quoted, that they possibly plan on supporting the Xbox 360 for another, and I quote this, probably another 5 years. Which would not surprise me, you know, looking at what Sony did with the PlayStation 2 in Japan. I mean, it wasn't discontinued until, I believe, last year. Looking at this, it's just didn't give me a compelling reason to buy it at launch day. Maybe if there was a reasonable price, I probably would have done so. Probably would have just marked it on my calendar, put a pre-order, like, and called in for a pre-order. It just didn't convince me as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced on either one yet. I most likely probably will get a additional console alongside the Wii U. And currently, in terms of feature set, it's looking like it will be the Xbox One. However, it's going to be all up to the actual game library and or how many exclusive games each system has. However, I would like to make a somewhat crazy prediction towards the Xbox One, which I've not heard on any other outlets. I think Microsoft's going to go a step further of pushing this to non-gamers as a media box. In that, I think if there are multiple SKUs at launch, I think the cheapest one won't even come with a traditional Xbox controller. Because we know that each system definitely comes with a Kinect in the box. I think they will sell a model which is the Xbox and the Kinect without the controller, which lets people use it as a media box in terms of they can use Internet Explorer, they can use Hulu, they can plug it up to their or it will be their media center and they can upload their own pictures, they can use it for Skype calls, they can plug their TV feed into it and interact with it that way. And I expect they believe there's a market to buy a game console who maybe never actually play a game on the thing.
I was just going to say, I completely agree. I think you're right.
Microsoft initially was clear the business reason for them to enter the gaming market was almost a Trojan horse of getting a PC into every living room. And I think this third generation of the Xbox console is really seeing this come to fruition. That's what makes me think they will be trying to sell these without game controllers, which takes it a step further from what even Nintendo did with the Wii, with the remote-styled controllers, which is getting rid of the controller entirely. And I think a lot of people, potentially more gadget enthusiasts, will pick up this box who wouldn't normally pick up a game console. And you never know, it might be then a gateway into them to buying games, but Microsoft will be more than happy for them just to be subscribing to their own services such as Xbox Music and the Xbox Video.
I agree. I really do. And, you know, it seems like Nintendo, what Microsoft saw, especially with the Wii, and what they had introduced with the Kinect, is obviously they wanted that, you know, what Nintendo had pretty much established in that whole Blue Ocean strategy, and how they had grabbed this new audience of game, like, you know, of, like, consumers. And with this right now being such an all-entertainment box, yeah, you could have that separate SKU, which basically does not include a controller, that goes to that, you know, like, that casual consumer, and then there's another SKU for that, you know, hardcore gamer. These features onto this console is, like, when it comes to positioning itself against Nintendo. I mean, what, going to this event, I assume probably, okay, I said to myself, whatever's being announced right now, it's probably not going to be as much as good news for Nintendo's, like, situation with the Wii U, because, obviously, as much as I love the console right now, but its potential is not being shown right now. It just hasn't been flexed, and it's just, again, spinning its own tires. And that's what I'm hoping with this next E3 that Nintendo's able to show. You know, show off what you can do with the gamepad, show what we can do with Miiverse. And, you know, what Microsoft is doing is showing these different features of what they can possibly do as far as, well, more non-gaming. I mean, stuff is more multitasking and just vocal controls. I mean, obviously there's more to it than that we don't know from that presentation, but it's, again, like I said, like to reiterate one last time, is just these features seem so overwhelming to me to the point where I'm thinking, like, you know, is this the same situation that's going with what they had with the PlayStation 3, is that you've had basically what I dubbed them the HD twins. You have two similar consoles, which, you know, get the bulk as far as multi-platform titles, have their own little exclusives, but one is selling basically to, obviously, one different, like, the same demographic. It just, one has its very loyal, like, you know, its loyal fan bases. But this is, I mean, again, I mean, this may bode well for Nintendo, but Nintendo has to do their own job as far as, like, you know, providing the software. If they can get the software out there and get themselves moving a little bit more as far as when it comes to units, they have themselves in a good position. But I don't think, I still go by the fact that this console will not be as huge as a success, probably, as what they had with last generation, the Wii. I mean, I could go as far as saying Nintendo may have to GameCube this, as in if their third-party support starts to, you know, fall under. I mean, just provide us with, like, you know, excellent first-party titles. I even when you looked at as far as the exclusives that GameCube had, I consider those probably one of the best of that particular generation.
I think for myself, I think Nintendo has actually played this one very, very smoothly. You know, I've said it many times before, you know, whether on the side or, you know, in personal conversations. I think that what Nintendo did is they knew that from their launch date, it would be another year or so before the other two even came out. So what they did is they released early, which a lot of people are upset about just because you don't have the huge, humongous selection of games, although we have over 40 games currently. So I think a lot of people are just, you know, just saying that because there's not a new game coming out, you know, every month or week or whatever. But Nintendo's, what they've done is they've allowed us to take the system with all these different games that cover almost every genre to make people happy, regardless of their game playing abilities or likes or dislikes. They've given us something that really showcases the system. They've given us, like, Nintendo Land, which is going to show you almost everything that the controllers can do and the functionality and so on. They've given us things like Monster Hunter, where you can kind of play it on your Wii U and then also play it on your 3DS and that cross-platform compatibility, basically. They've done a lot with the system, but what they've also been able to do is take what they have and make it better incrementally and listen to the feedback. So they do a small update, they're listening to the fan feedback, they're making another update, and so on from there. So by the time the other two launch, we're going to have a pretty solid system. Obviously, for Nintendo, it would have been just ridiculous for them to give us everything all at once. If they gave us Zelda and Pikmin and, you know, whatever else is out there, the new Mario 3D and so on, we would have all played it, we would have loved it, but we would have been done with them by now. And then, you know, what else is there? And then you come up to this E3 where we have Xbox presenting, you know, the game aspect of their Xbox One. You have PS4 potentially giving us a lot more information than they've already given us. And, you know, everybody's going to be hyped up about those two. But what would Nintendo have to give us? I mean, obviously there would be time for them to work on and develop other projects. But the projects that everybody wants would have already been here and gone and played and so on. So, you know, I think Nintendo's done a very, very good job at keeping themselves not only where they need to be, but also, you know, saving the best for last and putting them where they need to be in the future when the others come out. So I think we still have a lot more coming from Nintendo and just a lot more really good things that are really going to make this console seem even better as time goes on. You know, with the other two consoles, I think they've got a little battling to do. You know, like Lewis said, the Xbox One is doing a lot of what Nintendo is doing already with, you know, using the console as kind of a multimedia system, much on a much larger scale. But the great thing about it is the fact that it, like Lewis said, it's not, I mean, out of the box, almost nobody is going to use every one of those features, but the people that want one entertainment box on their entertainment center in front of their TV, you know, this is going to work for them. They're going to be able to play their music, their movies, their TV, and so on. All of it's right there in one box, one remote control, and everything is right there for you. I mean, I know that, you know, for my TV, there's so many remote controls in front of it, it's ridiculous. And I find myself using the Wii U gamepad to kind of switch back and forth from TV to Netflix to video games and so on. And I think Xbox One has taken that to a next level. I do think that it's too much all at once, but if they market this right, you know, they could have a very successful console on their hands. I mean, for the gamers, obviously the gamers are going to buy it because it has games, and that's what they love, and it's going to have exclusives like the Call of Duty and so on, and Halo. But for the crowd that wants that entertainment aspect, you know, they're going to present the entertainment aspect to that crowd. You know, wherever they do it, at Best Buy's or whatnot, they're gonna demonstrate it as that type of device. And then you're gonna have, you know, just other people in between that they can take this and really show it to. I mean, the movie buffs. You know, this is your all-in-one entertainment for just movies alone. And you know, if you're in your living room, you don't want your laptop nearby. You just have the computer. You can pull up the internet browser and go on Facebook and do whatever you need to do there. So they've got a lot of ways to market this, and I would bet that when you go into a, you know, like a Best Buy, for example, you're not going to find the Xbox only in the gaming section of the store. You're going to find it in the movie section. You're going to find it over in the multimedia section. You're going to find these all through the store. So one thing this is going to do. It's always going to be in your face. PS4, I mean, obviously we don't know yet. I would guess it's going to have some of these aspects here. I did see something earlier today. I've tried to find it, and I can't find it anymore. I'm not sure if it was an advertisement from Sony directly. It looked like it, but obviously that stuff can be photoshopped. But it basically had a Sony controller at the top of it, and below it, it said something to the extent of, "Ours still plays games." So, kind of like the old Nintendo, we do what Nintendo don't type thing, but kind of Sony going after Microsoft. I hope it's a real advertisement and not something that somebody just kind of, you know, photoshopped and put online, because that actually will put Sony, could put Sony ahead of the Xbox and the gaming side of things. But I don't think we can count the Xbox One out yet. I mean, I think that it could be a beast out there. I mean, I've got some concerns though. You know, the snap mode switching back from one to the other, it was very fast in that presentation. Is it going to be that fast in real life, especially as we start to load more and more games on there and applications and so on? So I don't know how much of that is going to have to do with the internet speed too, as far as switching back and forth. I'm guessing if you're going to watch something on Netflix, there's going to be an internet, you know, connectivity issue there. So people that don't have that high speed internet, those people that still have the dial up in the locations, how are they going to be affected like this? How are people going to be affected with this console that don't even have internet access? There's still a huge part of the population that doesn't have internet because of where they live. A couple other things that I'm kind of concerned about is the security aspect of this device. Somebody actually I was having a conversation with brought up, you know, this is always connected to your Kinect. Now, my Xbox 360 is always connected to my Kinect also, but it's not always online. I turn the console off when I'm not using it. This console, obviously you can pull the plug on it, but nobody's going to do that. So what happens when the hackers and so on start to, you know, try to target this system? Is there a possibility they're going to be able to, you know, have control of your Kinect and possibly the camera inside? Is there a privacy issue here? Will Microsoft be able to have that access? And maybe use that for something as little as advertising, at, you know, maybe the camera detects a can of Pepsi on your table in front of you. Maybe they start advertising that towards you because it's visualized in there. But I guess there are a lot of issues such as that, you know, are still a little unanswered. How are they going to battle stuff like that? A couple other things I'm looking at here is, you know, price-wise, I'm not worried about the price as far as right now. I know a lot of people were upset about no price being released at launch. I think if they did release a price then, it would have destroyed them. And I think that's the same thing for Sony too. I don't expect to see a price even at E3. I think they're going to hype up the system, let all of that information sink in for everybody, and then announce the price a week, maybe 2 weeks before it actually launches. That way people can kind of make their decision. And, you know, if Xbox announced their price right now and said, you know, we're going to sell this at $600, $599, Sony could easily come back out that next week and say, well, we're going to sell ours at $549. We're going to maybe lose $50 on it, but, you know, if people want to save that $50, they're going to buy us instead. And I don't think either of them are ready to make that switch yet. As far as backwards compatibility goes, I don't really see that as an issue, and maybe because I do own so many video game consoles that it's not an issue to me, because I can always pop a disc in, you know, one of the old ones and or a cartridge or whatever that might be. But we really didn't have the backwards compatibility with the last gen either. I mean, unless you got an original PS3, you couldn't play PS2 games in it. The Xbox 360 played very few of the original Xbox games. So, I don't know if that's even an issue anymore. I know that a lot of people want that, but I think it's just something to kind of complain about the new consoles here and so on. So that's kind of my view on it.
I say pretty long, like, just like, you know, list of, you know, thoughts on that there, Scott. I mean, like, all valid. I mean, not to go against it, but, you know, all valid points when it comes to it. I mean, I'm saving judgment until after E3, and probably once before, like, the pre-order startup, I may finally make a final decision on whether my next console will be. I mean, who knows? I may just skip out probably and wait a few months until I do this. I mean, until then, it's, again, to reiterate, it's just like, I feel like Nintendo's not out of the woods just yet. It's still, you know, still in a bit of a rut. And it still needs to actually, you know, unveil its games and what it does to show for the potential of the Wii U. This coming year is going to be a fairly interesting one, and it's going to be anything else. But Lewis, do you have any final thoughts to say about this before we end the show?
Yeah, certainly. Just to kind of transition from the Xbox One over to the future of the Wii U and the incoming Wii U-focused Nintendo director just before E3. Just to kind of follow on from what Scott said, I do think Nintendo is in a good position now, but the most important point being they're going to have these flagship titles, hopefully, if they've played their cards right here, ready for the holiday season. Things like the new 3D Mario, Mario Kart, the HD remake of Zelda Wind Waker, and possibly some others also. We all know from witnessing console launches of past that the actual launch lineup of games aren't always great. Now, it could be Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 which does buck this trend, but if they don't, they're going to have some very stiff competition with fighting against Nintendo's full brute strength of their key flagship titles. It should be interesting to see what sort of first-party launch titles from Sony and Microsoft can compete against an EAD Tokyo Mario offering. So, yeah, in conclusion, I do think Nintendo's in a good position now, and just rolling things back personally, I'm very excited to play these very fresh-looking Nintendo games coming, hopefully, in the coming months.
As do I, and, I mean, again, it's getting to that really good time of the year, whatever, with E3 coming up in about a few short weeks, and, you know, the announcements are getting there. I mean, I'm going to do myself to kind of lower my expectations to be a little bit more surprised when it comes to announcements. I mean, each year, I always expect one big title to get out there, and then I'm just ultimately let down. But in the case of this one, since none of us are able to attend E3 this year, unfortunately, but we will be covering it heavily during the each of the press, like, you know, each of the happenings, what happens with Nintendo, and, of course, with Microsoft and Sony. But, with that out of the way, we must come to the end of the show right now. And before we go, we'd like to hand out our Twitter handles right now. Scott, Lewis?
You can find me on Twitter, at EsselPratt.
And you can find me also with Luvsion, which is Leuvsion.
And you can find me at HMilfeld, that is spelled HMILFELD. We'd love your feedback, and plus, we would enjoy it if you talk more to us a little bit, aside from, you know, listening to us. That's why we need you to send in send in your tips or your questions, whatever, to it at tips@infendo.com. We will, we're getting this podcast back finally into a bit of a weekly thing right now. Of course, you know, we have all our day-to-day things, and we have different time zones to get everything together, whatever. I mean, it's a bit of a hassle. I mean, I know it's a hassle over there for Lewis right now, who I believe it's around 3 o'clock in the UK at the moment. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, it's 2 o'clock here, and unfortunately it's a bit of a disturbance, because it's stopping me from playing Monster Hunter, which I will be playing shortly.
So, blame Infendo Radio for that, kids. Thus concludes another edition of Infendo Radio. We hope to see you again soon.